Great, everyone. Well, it's good to be with you all today as we have our storytelling and organization story lab call. And today, our featured guest is Peter Dominick, who is an associate industry professor at the Howe School of Technology Management, which is part of the Stevens Institute of Technology. And Pete has some interesting things that he's been doing, and he's going to share with us a story of how he brought storytelling into the program. And Pam, I guess you can chime in at certain times if you'd like to, because Pete's colleague Pam Burke is also with us. But Pete, why don't you tell us a little bit about the school before you actually launch into the story of how storytelling came to be part of it?
Well, sure, Tom. And again, hello, everybody, and thanks for the opportunity to talk about some of the work we've been doing. I don't know how many of you are familiar with Stevens, but Stevens is located in Hoboken, New Jersey, across the river from Manhattan. Hoboken is famous for, amongst other things, being the birthplace of Frank Sinatra, purportedly the birthplace of baseball, and most recently the home of the Cake Boss. But in addition, it is the home of Stevens Institute of Technology, a terrific school that's been around for about a little over 140 years. We are primarily known as a science and engineering school. We have four colleges: a College of Engineering, a College of Systems and Enterprise Engineering, a College of Arts and Letters, and the Howe School of Technology Management, which is the part of the university that Pam and I belong to. And the university in total has about 2,300 undergraduates in a variety of different majors and areas. It has roughly twice that in terms of graduate students, with about a third of them being in the Howe School. People who come to our programs to learn about the relationships between technology and business. The kinds of degrees that the Howe School offers include an MBA, a degree in management, in addition, graduate programs in information systems, business intelligence and analytics, project management, and I'm probably forgetting one or two, to be honest. The school, in addition to trying to keep technology at our core, certainly, I think another big theme that we try to bring to bear in our graduate programs is to help people appreciate how technical work, regardless of its complexity, is still about getting things done with and through and for other people. And in that sense, certainly leadership becomes a big part of our curriculum as well. Well, hopefully that's a little bit of an overview about the university. I'll hopefully encourage you to please check out our website, learn more about the school and some of the interesting things going on there.
Great. Thanks, Pete. And as you just go through that with all the technology and engineering that's going on there, it's just great. I think that you're finding a storytelling component in there as you're training some of the folks who are in the management track there. So,
yeah,
go ahead and tell us that story that led to the moment of actually changing the curriculum so that storytelling became part of it.
Well, okay. Listen, folks, Tom said to me, can you start off with a story? And as much as I'm starting to explore teaching it, well, I'm still better at teaching than doing, so bear with me. But actually, I'm going to begin with a joke, and it may be a joke that many of you are familiar with. It's the story of a very religious man who finds himself living in the path of an imminent hurricane. Well, the authorities drive to his home in the hours before the storm is about to start, and they say, well, look, let us help get you out of here. And the man, being devoted to God, says, no, the Lord's going to take care of me. I'm going to stay right here. Well, the rain begins to fall. The winds pick up. The waters come rushing in, and soon he finds himself on the second floor of his home. He's there trying to stay above the water that's flowing into his house. And this time the authorities come again. This time they come in a boat and they say, look, let us help you. We'll get you to where it's safe and dry. And Noah, he says again, shouts, look, the Lord is going to provide for me. I'm fine. And sadly, they have to go away. Finally, he finds himself now on the roof of his house. And this time, well, thankfully, the authorities come by again in a helicopter. So they drop a rope down and they say, come on, let's go. We'll get you out of here. But again, he says, no, the Lord is going to care for me. Well, the waters continue to rise, and sadly, the man dies. He perishes in this storm. Now he gets to heaven, and frankly, God is kind of bewildered to see him there. And the man himself is a little bit surprised, and he says to God, oh, gee, I put my faith in you. Why didn't you save me from the storm? So God looks at him. Of course, he's compassionate, but a little bit, as I said, bewildered. And he says, well, geez, I sent you a car, a boat, and a helicopter. What more could you want? So,
yeah.
Well, I'm telling you that story, and perhaps some of you have heard it before, because frankly, when it comes to storytelling, I feel a little bit like that old man. And I'll describe to you a little bit about what I mean in saying that. You should know that for me, well, I've been teaching graduate leadership courses for a number of years now. It's only recently, as Tom had said, that we've begun to include storytelling specifically as a topic in one of those courses. And what's ironic about that, frankly, is that stories and storytelling have been important parts of my own professional development, and maybe many of you can relate to that as well. My professional development, and also, frankly, my understanding specifically of leadership. So let me share with you a couple parts of that story to talk to you about how we got to where we are. First of all, I'm an industrial psychologist by training, and actually stories are part of what helped introduce me to my field, helped me to learn about it. Some of the most valuable lessons that I learned came from having to apply theories about motivation or power or influence or even organizational structure for that matter to great books, Pulitzer Prize-winning books, frankly, like Tracy Kidder's The Soul of a New Machine, which is an account of Data General's efforts to develop what was at the time a state-of-the-art computer. Or another example, Tom Wolfe's book, The Right Stuff. There is a book about the early days of NASA and the space race. So here I was at an early age learning through literature about how to connect a theory with reality in ways that no textbook or spreadsheet could. For me, that theme goes on. Fast forward many years, and as a college instructor, I'm designing a course module on conflict management and negotiation. And I came across a panel presentation that included a renowned decision psychologist. Some of you may know the name Max Bazerman. Bazerman began his talk by stressing that social psychology experiments, actually, were essentially parables, little stories, if you will, designed to make a point about the relationships between people and their environment or their decisions, their behavior. And that stuck with me. It gave me a deeper appreciation for my line of work and what I do, but still I wasn't connecting it to the fact that, well, geez, I ought to be teaching people about this. And that was especially ironic because, as I conveyed, Stevens is a university that attracts people with a technical background, and many of those people, too, their work centers around helping to ensure that technical information is brought to bear on business decisions. So it's that same sort of connection between, you know, science and getting the message across, if you will. Finally, even just a few years removed from now, I had the opportunity to write a book review about Doris Kearns Goodwin's book, A Team of Rivals. And I was so excited to do this because, A, I love history, and second, I had always understood that, you know, history provided these great opportunities to apply ideas from the field of social psychology, organizational psychology. And yet, here I was reviewing this book about America's greatest, or arguably greatest, storytelling leader, and still not accepting to the fact that I ought to be teaching leaders about storytelling. So it really wasn't until we had the opportunity to rethink our curriculum. And in doing that, sat down to meet with industry executives, primarily from the aerospace and defense industry, to talk about how they understood key leadership skills for technical professionals. And in those conversations, several of them highlighted how the best technical leaders that they've worked with were able to use stories to make their points. So I literally had to be hit over the head with it. I literally had to have it put in front of my face before I started to make the connection that stories are an important part of influence and an important skill for leaders to be able to master and apply as well. And that's what brought me, in particular, and why I was so excited to have the opportunity after listening to the December Storytelling in Organizations call, to think about incorporating it into the course, to bring in a very authentic way exposure to storytelling for students in the course that we were teaching. So what I had in mind was to go on and get some of your reactions and share with you a little bit of how we tried to do that and hopefully give you some insight to some of the ways in which people in the course reacted to that learning opportunity. So let me pause there for a minute. Thoughts, questions, before I go on to talk a little bit more about the course.
Just for graduate and undergraduate students or strictly graduate students?
This particular course is for graduate students. It's actually the second in a series of two leadership courses that we offer. The first course in particular is really grounded in the notions of self-awareness. And I guess the way I like to describe it is that the fundamental question we're trying to help people deal with in that course is, what am I like? And how do I leverage my strengths to be effective as a leader, to understand leadership better? The second course, the course in which we've chosen to incorporate storytelling, is still grounded in some of the same principles of making it personal and leveraging reflection. But we try to shift the emphasis and sort of to shift the emphasis from not just what am I like, but what is my organization like? How do I help it get better? So that's the course in which the storytelling module that I'll talk about today resides.
Other questions that anybody might have for Pete at this moment? Okay, well, Pete, maybe we should just continue on and you can describe that project and some of what the takeaways were.
Sure, Tom. Well, as I said, this was a second in a series of courses on leadership and courses that are designed to encourage people to think not just about concepts, but to think about application and to do that through interaction and through a great deal of reflection. And as I've also said, I guess the other important thing to keep in mind about our graduate students, the people in this course, is, as I've said, most of them have technical backgrounds. They're coming to our programs to try and complement their technical skill set with expertise in management. Many, but not all, are working professionals. And in particular, in this case, the version of the course that I used this module in was an online course. So we were doing a fair amount of asynchronous work structured around weekly assignments and interactions and through a lot of teamwork and collaboration as well. So the module on storytelling included a number of different activities, and I wasn't necessarily, but I'll certainly be glad to elaborate on all of the different things that we did. They, in addition to asking people to listen to the storytelling call, we of course had some reading and some presentation material, which, by the way, for me, the irony of trying to talk about storytelling using PowerPoint is not lost on me, but I still do it. But in addition to that, there were some other assignments that we had asked people to do, and they included trying to find the story about organizations by visiting websites, for example, and also by asking people to try and collaborate to create story. So there were a couple of fun things, but frankly, one of the more important pieces of the module that we wanted to drive was simply to have people listen to the storytelling in organizations call. And the way we characterized that assignment was, again, to just provide, it gave us an opportunity certainly to introduce the National Storytelling Network and the Storytelling in Organizations group, and gave them just a little bit of background, but really just asked them to listen to the call and to share their reactions with their team members from the perspective of what story did you most appreciate, or what insights did you gain about the process of storytelling? And also, by the way, another piece of what we were trying to drive was another theme that in an earlier FIO call, too, that's been highlighted, and that was story gathering and the role that it plays, and it plays in things like change, for example. And perhaps the most, you know, at least to me, important question that I was interested in getting them to think about is, you know, how did this get you to think about yourself in terms of storytelling, your efficacy, if you will, when it came to storytelling? So why all of those things? I think, you know, again, for me, in listening to the call initially, I didn't get to listen to it live, but as is often the case for me, listening to the recording, there were a couple of things that really struck me and that I was hoping people relate to, and I'll talk to you about what we heard. One was, one of the things that came across to me at that call was the fact that the simplicity of storytelling, if you will. The stories don't always need to be elaborate or fully structured to be meaningful.
Hey, Pete, Tom, just butting in here for a second. Just in case some people might not have any idea of what that particular call was. So the call that Pete is talking about that happened in December, we just had a general topic of gifting and gifts. And then we had maybe four or five different people who shared a story. So we didn't necessarily spend a lot of time analyzing the stories. Mostly we just shared stories about gifting with each other during that December call. And I just wanted to make that clear. So thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. Thanks. Yeah. It was this sharing experience, this simple, at least to me anyway, this simple experience of people offering stories. And in that sense, it all struck me, and the other big theme I was trying to hope, you know, where the reason we wanted to share it was because that was all just so sort of easy, so accessible, and so authentic. Another big theme, and Tom already used the word sharing, that was another big experience to me in listening to that particular call. It wasn't just the stories, and many of you are probably even more familiar with this than I am, but it wasn't just the stories, but it was the way in which people interacted with the story, the ways in which people shared it. So those were three themes that I felt were especially important to help people experience about storytelling, and I was interested to see where they might go with it. And as I said, in particular, you know, getting to see it in action, my hope was that it was going to have some implications for their sense of efficacy when it comes to storytelling. And so what I thought I would do at this point is I'll just share with you some of the comments and the reactions that people provided in response to their experience with the module, and some of this also a little bit later, by the way, in the course where we had them do some journaling and reflection. So there were a couple of key themes that thought I would try to just touch on. One was this idea of how did it shape people's perceptions of the capacity to tell stories, their efficacy. The other is, what did they say about the communal aspects of storytelling? And then a third point I'll try to stress on is, or touch on, is their comments about what did they learn about the structure and technique of storytelling as well. So there was a lot there. And again, Pam, please share any thoughts or reactions you have as well. But I'll start with efficacy. A couple of the comments that I'm just going to put out to you and welcome any thoughts or reactions along the way. Here's how one person described it. Storytelling itself had never been something that I'd strived to learn. In fact, many storytellers I've met over the years are not people I particularly admire. Their stories often seem trivial and unrelated to anything of importance, a way to fill up empty space. So it's not surprising that I never had the motivation to improve or practice my storytelling. It never came naturally to me anyway. In fact, I didn't consider it a learnable skill until we explored it in the course. So one example of just highlighting appreciation that it actually matters. Another example, as I've learned, the role of storytelling can have an important impact on effective leadership. I'm more motivated to improve this communication technique. Storytelling has been used by leaders of all types of to influence others' viewpoints, diffuse uncomfortable or critical situations, and even to smooth over hurt feelings with associates or constituents. Here are some other examples where, based upon the experience, people, and this is always fun for those of you who are educators, I'm sure you can relate to, or any of you that engage with others, when people actually try to apply what they're experiencing. One person talked about how last week I gave a presentation that I give once every few months when there are new people joining our team, but this time I tried something different. Just in one section of the presentation, I tried to incorporate the concepts of storytelling, and I was completely surprised and happy to know that people loved that section of the presentation the most. This example was enough for me to decide that this is one skill I should develop sooner rather than later and use more effectively at every platform possible. Some other efficacy examples. The call made me think about how plausible it was, how authentic, considering the more modern reality of business. Another person talked about her experience as being part of a Women in Finance network organization. And for her, sort of being able to connect to the fact that, you know what, when we network and when we get together, in essence, what we're doing is sharing stories to help each other. As she put it, we actually engage and tell an engaging story. But from this week, I learned better ways to do that, to engage my audience, and also ways to have them have some better takeaways from what I might be saying. So those, to me, were just a couple of examples of where exposure to what was offered on that call, along with some of the other things we tried to provide, helped people to say, you know what, I can do this. In fact, I am doing it. There were other ways in which people reacted to the communal aspects of the call, of storytelling, of the call for that matter. A couple of simple comments. I always used to wonder where stories come from. Now I realize how people work together to make it beautiful and powerful. Another person making the specific point, geez, storytelling is a communal act. It brings people closer together through a shared vision. Through a plot, characters, and a setting, it can create an abstract experience. It can be influential in a direct way, in an indirect way, too. And in certain cases, it's better to show by example than rather than just by making a bold statement. Some other examples of appreciating that. Here's one yet another point about the communal aspects of storytelling. One of the things I liked about the call was how the group discussed the topic and harvested the story afterwards. Listening to the group bring up what they got out of the story, other ways in which it can be used and how they might change, really opened my eyes. I never thought about some of the different takeaways each person had from the same story, how they could be used to, in a corporate setting, up until listening to the discussions. Another person making a similar point. I thought I had listened to the stories very closely, but it was very eye-opening to hear how some of the other listeners brought up points that I totally missed the first time through. It was also interesting to hear the different types of scenarios that each of the listeners might use, in which each of the listeners might use the story. So some other examples of appreciating what the sort of the emergent nature of storytelling, which for me, I think I'm speaking for Pam too, you know, was gratifying to see. These were some of the things that we're hoping people to connect with. Stories aren't just something you bring to an interaction, but something that people are able to build on, to improvise on for that matter. So a third theme that we were trying to drive and use the call to help us do was to tune people into I guess what I'll characterize as storytelling structure and the technique of storytelling. And I think it's fair to say, which is great, you know, one of the things we asked is, well, which story resonated the most for you? All of the stories were valued by people in the course, but different stories for different people. But regardless, I think some of the things that people were able to hear, and hopefully in hearing it, right, that's sort of a first step to being able to do it, became that much more mindful of. So some of the things they said about what they heard in terms of structure and that aspect of storytelling, sorry to share some of that with you. I was very surprised to see mechanics or principles of storytelling or story building at work in these stories. The narration is as important as the point of the story. Always glad when people are able to connect things we ask them to read with what they heard, and that was the case here. I recognize several of the principles discussed in the lecture and the readings. For one, all of the stories had a good spine that I could follow. There was a lot of color that was added as the stories were told. Two of the themes we were trying to introduce people to is create the structure, the spine, if you will, of a story, and then think about what you're going to do to enrich it, to bring it to life. Some people mentioned specific stories and the ways in which they applied. Many enjoyed Robin's story about the Komatsu executive, the fact that she was able to add sound effects. That really helped add a lot of color, as this person put it. Jennifer, others enjoyed your story. Another story, as somebody put it, that had a lot of color was the one presented by Jennifer on the handicapped girl and her issues with getting to the school bus. Jennifer did an excellent job of jumping between the characters. She added so much emotion at the appropriate points that it actually made me feel emotional as well. Others commenting on Robin's story from the perspective what I kind of regard as a nicely written review. I also like how for a split second the stark reality as looms as the narrator explains the Komatsu executive discovering the bird's nest in the engine compartments. In a flash, one can imagine the worst-case scenario playing through human greed and arrogance toward nature, and yet the possibility that the executive could order the hatchling birds to be destroyed immediately to ensure the machines are shipped. However, this all changes in the blink of an eye, the person in the craft went on to write. And instead, the executive bows to nature, insisting that all measures will have to be exercised until the birds fly off on their own. To me, that was great to see somebody really engaging with the story and adding their own sense of color and emotion to what they were experiencing, for example. So those were just a couple of examples of student comments that approach the stories in terms of tuning into the nature of storytelling itself. I don't expect that all of them are going to go out and be performers by any stretch, but we were glad to see them be that much more aware of the dynamics of storytelling, the presentation aspects of it as well. The last thing that I thought I would touch on would be, I thought it might be interesting for you folks to react to. One of the things we ask people to think about is, what concerns you about storytelling? Is there something about it that bothers you? And then perhaps as educators or people involved in helping people to use story, maybe some of these will resonate for you, or maybe you'll have other perspectives as well. I think the biggest concern that people mention, and this, again, this isn't to say that it was preventing them from thinking about it, but certainly we want to encourage people to think about, you know, where are your hesitations, where are your reservations as part of a learning process. The biggest concern that people mentioned was authenticity. As one person put it, my only concern would be to ensure that the stories are authentic, that the leader isn't making something up to pull on our heartstrings to help determine that we are on his or her side. I guess, however, at the end of the day, true leadership would show through. Certainly for us in teaching leadership courses, when we talk about influence in particular and or talk about relating to people who have different kinds of interpersonal styles, there are always concerns amongst learners about the notion of feeling as though they might be guided towards being manipulative or, for that matter, being manipulated. So this isn't a new concern, but it was great, at least as far as I was concerned, to hear people relate it to storytelling. Again, another example of that. My main concern with storytelling being used as a leadership tool is that it is being used in a manipulative way in a business setting. So always being aware of that being important. Again, I think people understood that it isn't necessarily being used that way, but I'm glad that many of them could understand that. Somebody else had an interesting comment about accuracy, and so here again, to me, somebody sort of in that learning process, on the one hand, we just talked before about the emergent nature of storytelling and the way in which through sharing, new meaning gets created and the value that has. This person expressed maybe a contrary concern. He wrote, well, we really didn't touch on it during the semester, but having taken a course in crucial conversations last year, I'd be concerned that I completely understood my story before I told it to anyone. As I learned in that class, primarily say in difficult situations, people tend to exaggerate their stories because they don't always completely understand the facts. In those types of stressful situations, people tend towards three stories, the victim, the villain, the hopeless situation. These types of stories can get the storyteller in trouble. So another perspective that, again, I think is valid, doesn't preclude the importance of what happens through sharing stories or how, at least for me anyway, sometimes it's in sharing the story itself that I understand it better. From a self-awareness perspective, the value of self-disclosure, if you will, as a way to gain deeper personal insight, for example. Well, I think storytelling lends itself to that. But this person's concern is also equally valid.
Mm-hmm.
Other things that...
Pete, I'm going to stop you for a second here, and let's check in with a group and just see what kind of questions there are. We're approaching 40 minutes into our call.
Great, Tom, thanks.
Yeah. So comments that people have or questions they have about the process or... what's on people's minds right now?
Well, this is Pete Griffin.
This is Dave in Pittsburgh. And, you know, in fact, I have an engagement at TNC this week with some of their executives to teach them storytelling in a different way. But one of the things I always talk about is, when you mentioned being factual, being accurate, it all depends what type of story you're trying to present, whether it's a visionary story or... sometimes, you know, we all talk about these elevator talks in business as far as, and you need to be prepared. When an elevator talk is nothing more than a story that you are able to spin at the appropriate time. Do you touch upon those in your curricula?
Well, we didn't. In this particular module, I think, I think, that, you know, to your point, there's so much more to cover. I mean, our goal... In this course was to introduce the bigger picture idea and to help people understand some of the ways in which storytelling was accessible. We didn't get to that piece of it, and I think that would certainly be the kind of thing that's really valuable for people in a management context to understand, too. I think having said that, one of the things that many people walked away from this experience with was an appreciation for the fact that stories don't need to be long. They don't need to be complex.
That's correct, yeah.
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 Especially if you're just going up one floor.
Exactly.
true.
Pete,
yeah.
Pete Griffin, you were starting to say something.
Pete, is how long has this been part of the of your curriculum? How many semesters have you tried this?
Well, this particular module, guys, that we're, I'm talking to you about, this is the first time we worked with it in this particular format. And I think one of the challenges that we were faced with is, how can I do something meaningful about storytelling in an asynchronous online environment in particular? There have been some other ways where we've tried to work storytelling into other courses. For example, Pam and I worked, in particular Pam, last year on trying to structure an entire change management course around the idea of story, of trying to get people to embrace the notion that change management really is an unfolding story, for example. So these are things that, you know, and as I began by introducing them, frankly, I'm still trying to learn about, even though I benefited from them for many years.
Okay, thanks.
Other questions or comments?
This is Pam. I was just going to add a little bit about part of this course was offered in China, and we had two groups that I've been working with there. And there was a real turning point in the class after the storytelling module, which was week six. We had started, they had to do a journal, a reflective journal, partway through, and I found that it was extremely difficult to communicate with the Chinese students what we were looking for in terms of personal reflection and basically storytelling about what they were getting from the material and what they were thinking about themselves. And today I've been reading the final papers, which were the next set of journals, and they are just unbelievably better than the first round because people are willing to share some personal insights, not just regurgitate the content of the course. And every one of them pretty much starts with, well, in the storytelling module, I understood now why you're asking me to, describe my own personal experience, and that is a valuable way to understand my leadership. So I'm really happy to see that we finally were able to connect with students who might have a different cultural approach to storytelling. Where in the past they were willing to tell us stories that were cultural stories and proverbs and parables that everybody knew from their team, but not willing to tell a personal story. And by the end, willing and able to tell those stories and also happy to tell them and comfortable telling them.
Mm.
Yeah, that's a really great point, Pam. I think that also applied to many of our U.S.-based students as well. Whether it was the experience of doing some journaling to begin with, but combined with the number of people, for example, who identified storytelling as the leadership skill they most wanted to focus on, that was by far the most predominant skill, for example, that people stressed. And I'm seeing the same thing, by the way, in reviewing the writing of some of the U.S.-based students, Pam. It's much better.
Great.
Yeah. Well, Tom, we're coming up to the intended time limit here. I think the other thing that, I assume many of you on the call can relate to, is this was one module in a broader course about a number of different leadership themes. And I think one of the other gratifying things that we're able to see are the ways in which, and Sam just alluded to this, people could connect storytelling to those other themes that are part of this course, whether it was to look at the notion of authenticity, to understand change, to people who are also able to connect it to basic ideas about influencing, and even an applied module in this course. Some people began to understand, wow, you're talking to me about interviewing skills. That's really just another form of storytelling, at least from the perspective of being the person interviewed, for example. So when people are able to make those connections, it only helps to reinforce for me how important the topic is.
Yeah. Well, Pete and Pam, thank you so much for sharing a bit today about the program that you're developing. And I just found those comments by the students to be really insightful and kind of fodder for myself to remember why storytelling is so beneficial. So I thank you for bringing that to light for all of us, and look forward to hearing more as the course continues.
And thank you, Tommy. We really appreciate being able to draw on the work that you've helped to put out there for all of us. So, and thanks, everybody, for listening.
Great.
Thank you.
Hey, Peter, before you go, can I get your email? This is Dave in Pittsburgh again.
Sure, Dave. I'd be glad to. And in fact, Tom, I'll also try to send a little bit more material out if people are interested. But my email is peter.dominick, D-O-M-I-N-I-C-K. At
okay.
Stevens, Stevens with a V, .edu.
And I wasn't ignoring you, Pam, but I thought if I contact one, if I contact
you. You got
one,
it.
So.
Bye.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure, Pete, if you send out some more information, I'll pass it on to the group.
Great, Tom.
And while we have a few people on the call, just remind everybody that we're going to have a great pre-conference session just before the National Storytelling Network's conference happens in this July. And we're just very excited about that. Mark Steinman's going to give a really great talk on making the business case for storytelling in organizations. And I think you guys just made it in some regards with what you just shared. But then we have the knowledge management officer from the United States Forest Service. And
wow.
She's going to be sharing their program about how they do knowledge transfer by doing story sharing.
Great.
And we're going to do an open space where
Yay.
People can bring their own topics, and we'll break into small discussion groups for those. But so a lot of good things. So if anybody is going to the conference, I really encourage you to come to our session.
It sounds really good, Tom.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, everybody. Have a great afternoon. And we're going to have a gentleman from England next month named George Mead. And he has an Institute for Storytelling and Narrative. He's a very interesting guy and has just written a new book on storytelling and leadership. So I'll be sending out the details for that soon. But thank you, and have a great rest of your Tuesday.
Thanks.
Bye. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks so much.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Bye.